Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that explores divorce, separation, and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo, and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce, separation, and co-parenting from different angles. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable and host of the Divorce Podcast. In this episode, we're discussing dating after divorce, and I'm delighted to be joined by two experts. Rachel Lloyd is one of eHarmony's relationship experts. Rachel is a journalist and communications specialist who, since joining eHarmony, has turned her focus to writing about psychology underpinning contemporary dating and relationships. With her keen interest in what makes people tick, she candidly combines new and compelling dating industry insights with her own life experiences. Welcome, Rachel.
Hello.
I'm also joined by James Priest. James is often described as the UK's version of Hitch. James is the most experienced dating expert in the UK, having helped hundreds of thousands of singles. James has over 15 years' experience in the UK dating industry and has worked for over 50 different dating companies. James is also a best-selling author and has recently released How to Date During the Pandemic. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
It's lovely to meet you both, and thank you for coming on the podcast. I kind of think I want to start this episode by laying some cards on the table, though, my cards particularly. Today's topic is dating after divorce, and I am divorced and I'm looking to date. So I just wanted to get that off my chest before we start, just in case some of my questions seem a little bit loaded.
I think that's a good thing because it comes from the heart. So I think that that's a positive.
Thank you. So let's start at the beginning then. So it strikes me there are two types of post-divorce daters. There's those that get straight back on the horse and literally as soon as one relationship ends, they're back out there and back into the next one. And then there are those who wait and wait and wait. And I'm not going to say which one of those categories I fall into. Rachel, do you agree? Do you think there are different types of daters after divorce? And what's your advice if you're one of those people who wants to get straight back on the horse?
Of course, there are all sorts of different types of daters, regardless of life circumstance. Some of us really dread dating, and it's a kind of necessary evil, a process to find somebody we really want to be with. And other people are just kind of compulsive daters. But in terms of your question, which is all about sort of rushing in a way, getting back on the horse quickly, I would just say, beware of the dreaded rebound. The second most powerful life stressor after death of a loved one is a divorce. And obviously, there's so much involved in the divorce process. There's property issues, there's children, emotional heartbreak. And so therefore, if you are rushing, ask yourself, what's the evidence that I'm ready? And what's the evidence that I may not be ready? Because it could be that you just want to fix those challenging feelings you've been having if you're in a hurry. And when you do that, it can work, but the risk is that you'll either sort of get into things quickly and find that you bail, or you'll be making some kind of ill-informed choices, just looking for that sort of comfort. Because dating for some people is a kind of painkiller and a cushion against where they are in their life. So just, you know, I would gently ease in. That would be my advice.
Okay. James, I want to bring you in here then. So what do you think about people who perhaps are the opposite end of that scale and maybe wait and wait and wait and it never feels like the time is right?
That's a great question. I think many people do fit into that category. They think, well, I'll start dating again when I lose a stone, when I get a new job, when I get some more confidence, when something else happens. And the time never, ever comes. There's no perfect time to start doing this, but you have to do it when you're ready. There's no reason whatsoever why you have to rush into anything at all. But sometimes you start to think, do you know what? It would be quite nice just to have a companion, have someone to have some new adventures and to have new things to look forward to. So many people do start to get the itch again and think, do you know what? I'm going to give this a go. And then they're not sure exactly how to do this and if they really want to do it. So in that situation, if you've got kids and they're grown-up kids, speak to your children and tell them, look, I'm thinking about this now. what should I do? Should I give this another go? And you'll get their support and tell your friends as well. Your friends are your biggest support group beyond your family, and ask them to help you and just to be there, just to talk to things, talk about things that come along the way, like any obstacles, any goals you might have. And everyone's nervous about this to start with. It's just the unknown. You're out of practice, and dating is a skill that you can just relearn and start being playful and having good times again.
So you both mentioned there this idea of readiness, when you how you know you're ready and what happens if you're not ready. What are the sorts of signs around readiness, Rachel?
Well, I suppose you're going into it feeling reasonably confident. I mean, it's always, like James says, it is a scary new world for some people. And so it's natural to be a little bit nervous. But you don't have that dating deficit, that hunger to just, you know, kind of fill a space. And I would say take your time, see it as an adventure, see it as an opportunity to get to know people. Every day, even the bad dates, you'll have a takeaway. You'll have learned something new about someone. So it's a kind of uncovering process. If you are a divorcee with kids, that they are also adapting to a whole new world along with you and will have been obviously impacted by the split. So I think it's a great idea that James was saying, you know, to kind of use them in a way as part of your support group and include them in a kind of really positive way. But reassure them that you're not trying to replace the other parent, that, you know, nothing's going to happen too quickly. The circumstances aren't suddenly going to dramatically change overnight. That this is a getting to know process gently for everybody. I would just caution that if you're in a new relationship, I would give it a good sort of, my opinion is 4 to 6 months before you introduce them to your kids. Now, James may not agree with that. I don't know. But I wouldn't, you know, you don't want a string of new characters coming through the household because that's sort of unsettling for everybody. So just easy does it.
James, do you agree? Because 4 to 6 months sounds like a reasonable time frame. Is there a good time to introduce new partners to children?
It depends how old they are, what their maturity levels are. And I have clients now who have waited a year and still not told their children they've got a new partner because they just don't want to put them in that position just in case they're not ready for it. Maybe they're still dealing with the grief of the breakup of the relationship themselves. So I think the answer to that is 4 to 6 months sounds pretty reasonable. Anything less than that is probably a bit too quick. Anything beyond that, then your partner's starting to wonder, hang on a minute, am I a priority here at all? And of course, the kids are always going to be the priority. But making them feel included and doing something at your own pace when you're ready is the best answer to that.
Okay. And do you think with divorce, so when you've been through something that's perhaps quite so traumatic and life-changing, do you think there are common mistakes, James, that people make when they're getting back on the horse, so to speak?
Absolutely. It's reading too much into situations. Sometimes people will sell... You're reading too much. Sometimes people self-sabotage. They look for reasons for things to go wrong and they become too picky. And they start to get annoyed if someone hasn't texted them back immediately or what's going to go on. And then the opposite of this is there's a lot of love bombing going on. People, they will tell you how amazing you are and think you're amazing, rush into something very, very quickly. And you start to think, hang on a minute, why am I even with this person? I'm settling here. But you don't look beyond that. So you end up with somebody that isn't the right person for you because you haven't taken the time to really explore what's out there for you. So not knowing what's going on and just to not give it enough space. You have to space yourself out from that person because a lot of this chemistry people talk about is really just the gaps between seeing them when you're missing them, when you're thinking about them. If you're seeing them all the time, you will text them every 2 minutes. There's no gap. There's no chance to miss each other. And that's a very, very common trap people fall into.
Can I just second the love bombing premise? Because I think a lot of people, especially if they're a bit vulnerable and they've been through the mill a bit with a bad breakup or divorce, they love the flattery and the intensity that some new partners present. But that is a bit of a red flag, isn't it, James? If they're just suddenly super keen and want to kind of wrap you up in their arms with constant texts, I would just be a little bit careful with those characters and just pace yourself.
It can be a sign of narcissism if someone does that to you, because they really are directing an attention back to them by making you feel important. And of course, they want the attention. When they get that, when they do get what they want, then they tend to disappear very, very quickly. And they start ghosting and just vanishing from your life onto the next person. So don't be so keen that you must have this attention for somebody, because you're enough on your own. I think self-love is the most important thing here. You have to be really in control of what's going to go on, ready for this, and be completely comfortable. And then you're going to have what you want, the happy ending that you deserve.
Okay. Well, so I guess the opposite side of that then, and this is something, I'm going to confess, I feel very time poor. You know, I run a business, I'm homeschooling at the moment as well. I've got kids. There's so many things going on. I find it really hard to carve out that time. But I want to, because when I have downtime, there are now with my kids growing up, there's less to fill that downtime. And like you say, I'm at that stage where I feel like, oh, it would be nice to have someone to share my downtime with. What do you say to people like me who are time poor and I'm constantly looking for a shortcut, a quick way just to get rid of all the chaff and hit the wheat?
I think it's always good to have a dating plan, actually. I know that sounds quite businesslike, but think about the time that you do have available and have a sort of diary, if you like, or something that you pin up or you have on your computer, and just think, that is my me time, but I'm isolating. You know, it might be every day, it might be twice a week, whatever that looks like for you is fine. But know that during that time, you're available for communication with your dates and you're potentially going on the apps or you're seeing that person. Because nobody wants to date somebody who's kind of unreliable or constantly changing and moving the sort of agreed times when you're in touch. So just be mindful of that and honest about the time that you've got available.
Yeah, I completely agree. You've got to make sure that you are making time for the whole process and making time to get to know people and not dismissing them too quickly and just being available to make that deep connection that you want.
And are there different ways? So, you know, there's apps, there are websites, there are dating agency. Rachel E. Harmon is known for matching people on their values and personality traits. There's all different ways of doing it. But is there a certain kind of different ways that are better for different types of daters, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say?
Well, of course, I'm biased because working with eHarmony, we do match people according to their core values and personality traits. And what that means is that you've got a good chance of having things in common, a same life view. And really, that's a good predictor for long-term success, really. But you don't have to limit yourself just to dating apps. I mean, James can talk more about the industry as a whole, I would say. But if you're looking for a meaningful relationship, I wouldn't go for the super casual apps. I would look for, you know, the more bespoke matching platforms like ours, but there are other ones. A lot of people say to me, oh, I find dating apps so kind of traumatic. It's like a sort of supermarket sweep of people. You know, I can't bear it. And so it can be easy to get overwhelmed. So again, that's about pace. But meeting people organically is lovely. And it's what we used to do in the olden days. Do you remember the olden days? People used to meet in pubs and through their friends. Nowadays, most people, I think it's like one in two people meet online. So it's here to stay. But you can also, when we're not in lockdown, obviously, look to meet people through hobbies. And I'm a big fan of things like, you know, cycling clubs, running clubs, book clubs, dinner party groups. There are groups online where you can all have sort of suppers together. And ask your friends, ask for recommendations. Your friends are a really good judge of their friends, so they can give you really good, insightful feedback.
And James, what about your view of the different types of dating opportunities there are these days?
Well, Rachel's mentioned some great options there. I think going out and just going to try new things is always a great place to meet people. I've run singles events for the last 13, 14 years. Obviously, I can't do that right now, but the very act of telling the universe you're ready to go out there and do something can definitely start to make the magic happen. Sitting around at home waiting for someone to knock on your door is not going to happen, especially now. If they do, they're going to wear a mask, so you're not going to recognize them. So I think get yourself out there in some way or another. And dating apps and dating sites can be really good if you know what you're doing, if you have good pictures, good profile, and you're proactive. But also, I work with a lot of different matchmakers now, and I'm a coach for 14 different agencies in the UK. And they're not right for everybody. But if you've been trying something for a while and you're ready now to go and find somebody seriously, then a good matchmaking agency can find you somebody, again, based on your values, based on your interests, based on what you really want, and they can shortcut the process. but they are quite expensive. They're not right for everybody. And if you're completely new to dating and you haven't done a lot recently, then definitely don't do that. Get yourself out just for some practice. Go out there and date people you meet on these sites. Just say you're ready for this. Because if you're going to make an investment of several thousand pounds for an agency, you want to make sure you're going to get the best return you possibly can. You don't want to blow this by sitting down and have no idea what to talk about and how to flirt. So go out there and just practice.
So this is where I'm going wrong. I've just been sitting in waiting for someone to knock at the door. I see this now. Okay.
Well, you could date someone from Amazon or, you know, one of the delivery people. I chat to them all the time.
Well, obviously the pandemic has brought a completely different sort of way of dating and looking at dating at the moment. Rachel, what are the key changes, obviously, apart from the fact that everyone can't see, what are the key changes to dating? What are people doing if they can't get out there and meet people at the moment?
Well, we did a big report with Relate, the counselling charity, last year, and we really drilled down on how COVID had impacted how people date. And some interesting findings were this concept of turbo relationships. And what that means is that everything's sort of sped up. So couples that were sort of in the early stages of dating, because of the lockdown last year, a lot of them moved in quickly, met the parents, and a third of people that we polled said that 2 months living together in lockdown felt like the equivalent of 2 years in a normal kind of relationship. So that was interesting. We also know that during times of uncertainty and during times of sort of fear, really, people want more certainty in their life. So actually, the silver lining of this is that we saw an increase on our site of a third more people dating and looking for activity on the platform. So we know that there are a lot of keen daters out there, and they're choosing to do things obviously like go for walks, video date. Video date is huge, and most of the dating apps now have a video date function and voice noting. You can do that on a lot of the apps now as well. So that's going on. Also, we coined this phrase Darcying, and that's after Darcy from the Jane Austen books. Because another silver lining of this sort of lockdown dating is that because you can't sort of jump on each other physically, because when you sort of meet for your walk, potentially, you've got to be a meter, 2 meters apart, chemistry doesn't obscure, because chemistry can sort of change everything and obscure you from really getting a sense of who the other person is. Because, you know, you're like, I really fancy them and there's sparks flying. I forgot to sort of check out whether they were a narcissist or not. So one of the benefits of this kind of this restricted way of dating is that you can get to know people personality wise before the physical comes into play. And as I say, my favorite technique for people at the moment is to try the video date. And you can get used to it very quickly. Just make sure that you're not in your pajamas and that the background looks, you know, unlike me today, tidy up the background. So that's my take on that.
And James, what have you seen the rise of video dating and what the sorts of things that you do for people in coaching on a more personal level?
Very much. People really did embrace video dating. And this is always going to happen. It's always going to come. And in America, many sites and apps have got video dating for the last few years. But now everyone's got it. It's the best way to possibly meet somebody if you're locked down and you can't go somewhere. But the trouble is people have been doing it completely wrong. They've been having 4.5 hour dates, nonstop chatting. And it's good, but it's not a date replacement. It's not an excuse to not meet somebody. It's good to filter somebody if you want to meet them.
Yeah.
But the big problem with video dating, in the same way that a socially distanced walk has the same issue, there's no real eye contact. You have to have eye contact to make a real connection with somebody. 8 seconds minimum every now and again is the way that you get to really build that bond. And you can't, because if you're staring at the screen or you're staring at the camera, there's no real eye contact. But it's a good replacement and people have been enjoying it. And absolutely, people have had a good chance to reflect now on what they want and what they don't want. So like Rachel said, people are giving people more of a chance now. And they're really thinking, well, I'm going to get to know them properly. But there is a problem with that as well, is that the longer you talk to somebody or the longer you don't meet them, the more chance it can become a fantasy to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it can go on too long. And I think there's no reason why after a couple of chats that you can't meet somebody. Go for a walk. If you're going to go for a walk, then do sit on a bench for at least half an hour before with a coffee or a glass of wine to get that eye contact going. Then you're going to really fill that spot with somebody. Otherwise, you're just walking along trying to avoid bumping into puddles with no eye contact. It's not great, but get yourself out there. I think it's a good thing to do. If you can't meet somebody, video dating is a fun thing to do.
Can I just say, the longest video date on our site was 24 hours.
Oh, and
we were really excited by this, but I didn't want to like upset the engineers on the site and say, I think somebody probably went to sleep and left the camera on.
Yeah, it's likely.
Or scarily was watching somebody sleep. Oh. So the key thing that I'm taking away from this is it's all about the eye contact. So whatever we're having to do because of the pandemic, we need to try and maintain the core element of getting to know somebody or creating that connection with them, which is finding ways to have proper eye contact. Have I got that right?
It is. That's an important part of it.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you haven't got any eye contact, then you're not going to be able to flirt properly. You're not going to be able to really understand them and get to know them, because the eyes are a bit of a cliche. The eyes are the windows to the soul, and if you can't see the eyes, this is why I recommend, for example, on dating sites, you don't wear sunglasses, because you can't see the eyes, and any form of mask in any way is not going to be good. So try and avoid having pictures like that. I'm sure Rachel would agree with me.
I would agree to a point. What's a really funny finding from looking at sort of thousands of our profiles, anonymized data, obviously. We found that men love a picture of a woman in sunglasses, but it doesn't work the other way. Obviously, though, you need to have three or four pictures. You can't just be in your sunglasses, ladies, in every picture. But that was quite an extraordinary finding. The thing is with your pictures is to be honest, use current pictures. It's also good to convey a sense of who you are, what you do. So it might be a picture from your skiing holiday or when you were in your garden, whatever signifies the kind of stuff you like to do. Give some clues. And, just don't get those dusty old photos from 10 years ago out, because you're just setting yourself up for a lot of stress when you meet the person and they go, no, I don't think I'm meeting you. Who are you?
Yeah, I'm meeting your younger sister.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just thinking that video dating is quite perhaps a good window for people who perhaps because of the divorce or separation or whatever are single parenting. And if you've got your kids around and you're sort of acclimatizing to a new set of financial circumstances, there's not a lot of money around to be able to hire babysitters, even when you can, to then go out and be able to date and stuff. So I guess the video dating is quite a cool way forward for single parents to, like you say, to filter out and then really focus on the people that they think they are going to have some kind of match with.
You can also do online events like speed dating. You can do online speed dating, and some companies do that. And I think eHarmony is going to be doing that at some point, or some dating site's doing it, and they're doing these big online speed dating events. It's just practice. Getting to talk to new people, however you do it, is important. If only people you ever speak to are your kids, then it becomes quite a lonely world. So I think if you can't go to a real event, do it online. Learn a new skill, talk to other people, just have a bit of fun, just to practice being more playful and flirting.
I mean, are we ultimately saying that this is a numbers game?
Rachel?
I'm not sure it's a numbers game, because then if you're not careful, you can get into a place where it's just, you're constantly sort of going through different options and never settling on one. And that can have an addictive quality. It's a bit like gambling, But what I would say is that, practice is perfect. I want to back James on that, because I think the practice of meeting people, of connecting and talking to people is super important. So, yes, if you want to go to some events online, that's fantastic. The video date is just brilliant, because you do get that real sense of who the person is. I agree, it's not a real date. You can't get the full sort of measure of someone. But it's much better, because we tried to launch video dating 2 or 3 years ago and there wasn't really an interest in it. People were sort of shy about it. But now they're much more willing to do it. So I think it's been a really great development from this kind of lockdown nightmare. And it's something definitely I would try if I was in that space.
Okay. And James, you've mentioned flirting, I noticed, quite a few times in this conversation, and it sent a shudder down my spine each time. Is flirting the only way to date, and can you teach it?
Well, flirting is a skill that everyone's born with, believe it or not. There's two levels of it, the playful side of it and the sexual side of it. And in between, you've got flirty banter, which sort of crosses the bridge over to it. But the playfulness is all you need to remember. And it's a skill that everyone's got. Babies flirt to survive, to get picked up, to get attention. They don't care who it is. They don't discriminate, old or young, fat or thin, male or female. They want to pay, get tickled. They want to make you laugh. That way, they're going to get attention and they're going to have a good life. And all it is embracing the inner child inside you and just having fun and being vulnerable. That's what it is. And that's what flirting is at that level.
It's funny because I've got some friends, James, who really say to me, I don't know how to flirt. I don't know how to do it. And they Everyone get really sort of anxious, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you find that?
All the time. 90% of people say that they can't flirt and 10% say, I'm a great flirt after a few drinks. That's what they tend to say.
But not too many.
No. All it is making sure the other person's having a nice time and you're paying attention to them and being conscious of what they're up to. Because there's no time to be self-conscious and worry about yourself if you're conscious of somebody else. And it's not putting yourself down, it's making yourself look good in that way. It's being adventurous, being playful, and just having fun. Because dating's supposed to be fun, and if it's not fun, you're doing it completely wrong. So you've got to embrace it and just see what adventures are out there. And don't be afraid. When you meet the right person, the conversation will flow. You have a lovely time with them.
I think that's also about the compatibility thing, because if you really bond with someone and you do have the same kind of traits and values, that kind of rapport will come more naturally. So if it's not working with some people and you just feel that you can't flirt or you're not yourself, that's just maybe a sign that you're not compatible. And that's fine. That's why, as James says, practice is perfect. Get out there, connect with people. And just, you know that eventually, this doesn't happen overnight, by the way. The other thing is people, because we're in this instant swipe culture, everyone thinks, oh, you know, I'll be in a relationship within 2 months or 3 months. But you've got to allow things to go through the natural process. You've got to see it as an adventure and not put yourself under too much pressure to meet someone, you know, at lightning speed.
Or listen, that's all been a fascinating discussion. And I'm sorry that we're running out of time, but there are some fabulous tips and hints about how to get on dating and how to start again and how to be successful. So I want to thank you both for your input. It's just been fascinating. Honestly, could sit here for another half an hour, although I will.
So could I. I want to ask James for his tips.
To feeling a little bit uncomfortable when you're saying some of it, but that's okay.
I think
one step at a time is my message to everybody out there. One step at a time. But thank you both. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How can people find you both? James, how can people find you and get in touch with you?
Well, they can find me through my website, which is simple. It's jamespriest.com, or through my Instagram, which is jamespriestcoach.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Rachel?
We're at eharmony.co.uk and we have a dating advice page within that for tips. And I'm on Instagram under Love by Rachel. So I look forward to seeing people there.
Brilliant. Thank you. And of course, you can find me. I'm at Kate_Daly on Twitter. And you can listen to more of the podcasts at thedivorcepodcast.com. Thanks both Rachel and James for a fascinating discussion. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.